Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to Not Another True Crime Podcast. I'm Sarah Levine. Danny is out, but I am very excited to be here with a special guest. You probably know her and love her if you listen to the Sup podcast. We have our news director at Betches, Amanda Duberman.
Hi, Sarah. I haven't been at this mic for a while. Thank you for inviting me, for giving me the honor.
I haven't been on this physical mic in a while either.
Really?
Yeah, we've been recording from home. So happy to have you and talk to you in studio.
I know. I'm excited. I did DM you as soon as I finished watching what we're going to talk about.
An honor.
I hope Danny is well, but I don't mind pitch hitting today.
Yes, I was going to say, it's always an honor when like my friends immediately text me and they're like, okay, are you watching this documentary?
Oh, good. I'm glad. Because sometimes I'm like, I have to keep myself from like, I'm sure your listeners know Dylan. Like, I have to keep myself from being like, texting him every time I have an opinion about The Housewife because I'm like, everybody's doing this to
Okay, I'll text you then because I'm like, who can I text? I text Danny Murphy, obviously.
Okay.
And then I'm like, yeah, I should leave Dylan alone.
Yeah, us with access to Dylan and Danny is really, really spoiled.
It's so true. We really have the tea.
Yeah.
But today we're going to be talking about the Natalia Grace documentary. I feel initially I thought this was going to be like a one and done, one shot thing, but they really blew this out with another 6-part season, essentially. It was wild. So to catch you guys up, on New Year's Day, there was a second part of the Curious Case of Natalia Grace, and it's called Natalia Speaks, and it contains extensive interviews with Natalia, and it's really the first time we've heard from her in detail about what really went on.
This is the first time any of us have heard from her, or as I think I am sort of like a more casual viewer, like I watched both documentaries, and I feel like you are the one, you're on Reddit, you're diving deep. Like, is this the first time has her voice been part of this at all more quietly? Or is this really the first time she's been like, okay, I'm ready to speak?
It's a good question. No, I mean, she's been on Dr. Phil.
Right, okay.
She gave some interviews when that story first broke. But I feel like she has never really gone into depth about like what really happened. I think when the story first broke, it was like, is she 8 or is she 22? And she was out here saying like, I was 8, you know?
Yeah.
So in the documentary, Natalia goes into detail about the abuse that she suffered at the hands of the Barnetts, particularly Christine, and exposes a number of their lies and basically how deep this conspiracy to paint her as a sociopathic adult went. There were just so many lies. I mean, for one, like Michael lied about Natalia's adoption being closed, which seems like such a small thing. But it really just shows like how deep they thought about it of thinking like, okay, so people aren't going to question my claims if they think the adoption is closed and they think they can't go back and dig into her previous families.
Mm-hmm. Maniacal.
I was going to say, I was like, evil was what I was thinking, but maniacal I like. And there was, and she pretty much refuted all of the Barnett's claims of violence. The big one I feel that made all the headlines was like her standing at their bed holding the knife, which like, all things considered, I feel if that were to happen in a vacuum when you're dealing with like a severely abused child is not that out of the realm of possibility, I feel like just
that's what I came away
knife.
Thinking too. Yeah.
Yes. But Natalia said that the Barnett's bed was like eye level for her because we're remembering she has like a rare form of dysplasia and is, you know, very small. And also she can't even grip a knife because of her disability, which I feel like hearing these things, I was like, why did nobody questioned this, myself included. Why did nobody publicly question these claims? The big one, too, was that they really, I remember when the story first broke, the reason it was this whole quote unquote mystery was because the Barnetts put forth this narrative that because of her disability, there's no way to tell how old she is. And we were like, oh, that's weird. But like, apparently, that's not true at all. And there are many ways to tell. And I'm like, why did the media never just ask one expert for these articles.
that was definitely the biggest shock to me is that like after watching the first season, I mean, I think, because I remember, I think when like the Daily Mail article came out, mm-hmm. everyone was like, oh my God, it was actually an adult. And I remember were like, no, this couple is wild. Like, you cannot trust them.
Yeah.
But still, I came away from the first documentary as like, guess there's no way to know. There were many, many, many ways to know. Like, I cannot believe the first season definitely like willfully did not make clear that like the only thing that they brought to the court was a letter from a doctor who was a family friend.
Yeah.
One dude. Is insane. And then within, like, I'm sure you'll get to it, but like within, you know, the first or second episode, they're like looking at the baby teeth. I guess I just took for granted.
I was like, duh, baby teeth. We're so fucking dumb.
Certainly the consequences of calling an 8-year-old an adult. Like, I just assumed that they had gone to the most thorough length, that the court, that somebody there.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a tragedy of her story, is like at every single opportunity when somebody just had to be like adequate at their job.
Yeah, adequate.
Adequate empathy. Have adequate curiosity. They just did not. And this has made me question, like, even my own, like, oh, is I curious enough about the curious case?
I don't know. I think so too, because especially part one was a very, yes, part one was, is she adult? Is she an adult? Is she a child? And all these behaviors, quote unquote, that they would use to point to her being an adult. I am a very, you know, average person, not an expert in this field. But even me watching this was like, okay, so she got her period early, like big fucking whoop. Oh my God, maybe she's acting hypersexualized for a child. Like, that is a common sign of abuse. Like, I'm just standing there.
Or maybe she's 12. Like, yeah. You know,
I remember when this first came out,
8 and 22.
Right. Like, the window, does not have to be, like, these are not the only two scenarios.
Totally.
Ugh, okay.
So, I feel like that says something very particular about womanhood. Like, you're either a woman with like child, like you're a child with a virginal child who's like not like allowed to say anything, or you're a woman in her 30s.
Yes, not a girl, not yet a woman.
Right.
And so in the documentary, which I feel this waited way too long. This should have happened way earlier just in life. But yeah. She did a blood test, which surprisingly not, found that Natalia is about 22 years old now, which, yes, means that she was indeed a child when she lived in the Barnetts, with the Barnetts. She would have been like 9 or 10 in 2010. So like she was
unequivocally,
in fact,
conversation over. Like,
yeah.
Like that with the baby teeth? Okay.
Yeah. Judge, what's going on here? Yeah. I feel...
The part where they did, because the way that they, like, they test her blood, they test everything about her. And for me, there was such a, like, dissonance between, like, this company clearly does not exist for crime-solving purposes. Like, they seem to be, like, super, like, health bro, people that want to have too much money, really want to optimize themselves, like, drink their kids' bloods, like, those types. Because the founders were definitely, like, those type, like, Silicon Valley adult male blondes. And then, but they're, like, doing this in the context of this, like, very dark, disturbing, upsetting, like, thing. And it was just, like, such a strange like contrast to me.
Yeah, they're like one of those longevity companies. Yeah,
totally.
That's so funny. So I think the big question that everybody asking watching the documentary is just like, okay, why? Like, why would you adopt this child that you clearly have no interest in caring for to the, you know, nefarious end of like that you're going to abuse? Like, why would you do this? The answer, surprisingly, I think, was money, because I was thinking maybe it's money, like you get money from the state. I don't know. But I'm like, how much is that really? You know, people with disabilities really struggle to even claim disability benefits, and it's not really enough to live on. But the answer is, again, a bit more of a conspiracy than that.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Thank you.
If you remember from part one, Christine and Michael's one son, Jacob, was this genius. And Christine had like written a book about him. And apparently he was getting optioned into a movie, which I don't know if I believe. Yeah. But apparently Christine was going around and saying that she made her son Jacob into a genius because, I don't know, she's just such an amazing homeschool teacher or something. And she even wrote this book called The Spark, A Mother's Story of Nurturing Genius and Autism.
Okay, they said she got a $600,000 advance.
I don't believe that either.
No, we know people that write books. People get six figures. That's crazy. That's like you're already kind of had a hit. Like, that's bananas. And nothing about their lifestyle indicates that, like, I don't know, if you squandered $600K that fast that you needed to, like, steal a kid from Ukraine and then... there's a lot going on there.
Well, I feel like it was on their like 14 couches. That's the one thing I remember from the first part. Exactly. I was like, what are you doing, Michael? Yeah, I didn't believe that. No. I was like, I'm going to need that receipt. Because I feel like even the Blindside family did not get an advance that big. Yeah. And I have never heard of this family.
This was just her normal smart son, you know?
Yeah. And I had never heard of this family before this. So I'm like, I don't think you got that much money. And I also, we'll have to fact check that. But yeah, so... apparently, this was a big payday, so Christine wanted to adopt a disabled child and make that child a genius and then get more fame and money off of that claim. And then when Natalia was not a genius but, like, just a normal kid hitting normal benchmarks, which I think is pretty incredible because this is a kid who's been through trauma, I think that's great. That's when they kind of concocted this plan to just get rid of her because in Indiana, I think – a disabled child is a dependent for at least 21 years. Mm-hmm. So that was why they were like, all right, we got to get rid of her. We don't want to be responsible for her. And they re-aged her to 22.
22, which is conveniently 1 year older than 21.
I just can't believe that this worked.
I know. These fools. Like one letter, like it just, that was the biggest surprise to me was like, I don't think the first season, because the first season, I mean, and we'll get to it. Like, I hate these filmmakers. This is so irresponsible. Like, it's all for entertainment value and keeping people tuning in. It's made me question my consumption of true crime, probably belatedly. Like,
oh, whatever.
Like, overall. Same. like, the first season, like, they could have made it more clear. Like, it just was not clear enough to me as a consumer. They really just... I don't know if they said this, but it just seemed like they had exhausted all the ways to find out what her age was.
No, I agree.
If a judge were to be like, yes, sure, because the consequences of that, specifically the abandoning an eight to 10-year-old in a rough neighborhood with no food upstairs. And she really like the DePaul said, like people with her condition typically have to get a lot of surgeries early in life to make their later life, easier and to ensure their mobility. And like, just the consequences of that decision.
Yeah.
The fact that they made it so lightly and is wild. It's wild.
Yes. And I feel like we'll definitely talk about this because I don't feel like they interrogated Michael nearly enough.
Absolutely
not. So, and speaking of Michael, so they have this reconciliation. So they agree to meet, which in what I believe is the first time since he got acquitted on these charges related to child abandonment, which was also such BS, by the way.
Shocking.
Couldn't believe that.
How did they justify acquitting him? Because she was an adult? Because legally she is an adult.
Yes,
still?
It was such a technicality from the end of the first documentary, if I remember correctly. They were basically like, you can't bring up her age at all. Like, you can't say child, adult, nothing. And the whole case hinges on her being a child. Like, how are you going to have a child abandonment case and not be allowed to say the word child?
Right.
Like,
this poor person. Yeah.
Like having a murder trial and not being able to say that somebody died. Yeah, like what?
Totally.
So it was like a complete technicality.
I just watched Anatomy of a Fall. In France, you can say anything. Just shout at them, whatever you want.
Oh my God. In the Law and Order universe, you can do that
exactly,
too.
Exactly.
So their first meeting does not go well because, which I forgot to mention, but Natalia gets eventually adopted by this family, the Manses, and there's Bishop, Antoine, and Cynthia. So her dad, quote unquote, Antoine comes with her to this meeting and basically goes off on Michael because Michael won't promise to stop cursing. And like, there's this moment where Michael even just says like, oh, I don't even know what the hell was going on. And that really sets Bishop Antoine off and he kind of freaks out at him. And Michael also just freaks out and storms off, which might have been the one time I was on Michael's side. Like, he wasn't even like, you know, fuck Jesus. He literally, he just said like, what the hell?
Right.
So that didn't go well. Then the second one kind of goes better. Eh. Like Michael.
That was so painful to watch her just like weeping while these two men in her life are like just going at it, being insane, being volatile, being like led by ego. It was so hard to watch.
Okay. Also, I feel we have to talk about the second meeting because Michael, I took a picture of this with my phone because I was like, what's going on? Michael is wearing like a t-shirt with a penguin on it and a backwards baseball cap. I'm like, that's your outfit?
That's what he chose to wear. He made a choice that day.
Yes. I'm like, not a collared shirt. What's going on? So I feel that was the level that he gave a fuck.
Exactly.
And this one eventually sort of goes better. Like Michael eventually apologizes for like not being stronger to stand up to Christine. But that's really the extent of the apology we get from him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not my apology to accept.
She was maddeningly generous to him, I found, which seems to owe a lot to like her faith that the man's
100%.
I'm sure not given her any choice but to fully take on as her own.
100%, because it ends with this scene of like Natalia saying that she forgives Michael and praying over him. What I thought was wild was that Michael was like, I'm ready. I'm here to like be open and honest and take accountability, you know, like stuff all the Real Housewives say. But he notably refuses to talk about the re-aging. Yeah. Like that topic is off the table.
Because that opens him back up to liability, probably.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Yes, after the first documentary, I was like Googling Double Jeopardy. I was like, how can we fucking?
I was surprised like how much, because as soon as they said that, I was like, what are we even going to do here for four more episodes? Yeah. And that just speaks to how many terrible things happened to her that like, fine, you don't even have to mention the age and you can talk about just the abuse in the home.
Yeah.
Like even if it happened while she was an adult was appalling.
Yes. Yes. And this was also a image sticks in my head. When he leaves the meeting, Michael goes, forgiveness is good. Forgiveness wipes it all away. And then he literally gets in his convertible and just drives away.
He's so pathetic.
It doesn't wipe it all away. No. Like, are you out of your mind? That part made me angry.
That. He deeply believes that. Yeah. For sure. Like without like no recognition of the fact that like Natalia chose to forgive him for her.
Sure.
For her peace of mind.
Totally.
But he definitely was just like, oh, we're fine. We're all fine.
Yeah, like
it's
I'm
all
good.
Gone. It's all gone. It's like, no, that's just, she's going to move on and try to find something productive in her life.
Yes. And not like harbor resentment. Yeah. So, oh my God. Throughout this documentary, we hear from Natalia's new guardian, Cynthia and Antoine Manns. And throughout, they are Natalia's champions and they speak very highly of her. And we're like, fucking finally, some adults in her life who are looking out for her.
Not adults I'd want to spend my time with, but adults that definitely seemed like they had cared for her materially enough to the extent that they could. And like, she clearly felt loved.
Yes. I was like, you know, I'm with you. Not my type of people for sure. I'm sure it's mutual. And Natalia met Cynthia through a neighbor when she was living alone in Lafayette, when she was like in that apartment, when she was legally 23, but actually 9-ish. The couple have multiple children, including Genesis, who in the documentary recounts a time when Natalia bit her when she was a baby and Natalia was 10. But like, they were kind of like, it was fine. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I did notice a couple people on Reddit also misunderstood this part because my subtitles said Natalia beat me.
Oh, no.
And so I actually inferred Natalia beat her as a baby to a degree that resulted in Genesis's special needs now.
Oh, God.
And so that is very different from she bit me when I was a baby. But it was bit.
Jeez.
It was bit.
Yeah.
Just in case anyone else.
Gotta double check those captions.
Yeah, I got the wrong captions.
Yeah. But I think they kind of said, you know, there was this incident, but, you know, nothing outside the norm of like sibling fighting. And in episode 5, Bishop Antoine says there's nothing dangerous about Natalia at all. Absolutely not. And they kind of all agree.
I bit my siblings.
Yeah.
Not when they were babies, but I bit them.
Yeah. That did not seem like a smoking gun to me. Yeah. I was just like, yeah, sure. Like, who hasn't done that? And he, Cynthia, and Natalia all agree that she had some behavioral issues when she first came to live with them, which is very understandable under the circumstances.
Yeah.
And the penultimate scene of the documentary shows Natalia, who actually at this point is legally and actually an adult, being formally adopted by the Manns. And it's very heartwarming. It's really like, I was like, oh, what a great way to end this. Like, you know, she finally got her family. They're crying. I'm crying. Everybody's happy.
Yeah. And the fact that, like, even though she's an adult, that was still meaningful for her to make them her parents.
Yes. Yeah. Agree. And they still were, you know, happy to go through that step and everything.
Yeah.
But the documentary ends with this sort of bombshell, a recording of the man's calling the producers of the documentary 6 months after Natalia's adoption and 2 weeks before the release of the documentary. Basically, it's this voiceover of Bishop Antoine's voice, and he says, something ain't right with Natalia. This girl is tweaking. I feel like she's an enemy in the house. And she said to us, we have held her hostage, made us look like we're the enemy. And then Cynthia says, Natalia is stabbing her family in the back over a complete lie. And then Antoine continues, she's done other things too, but this was a new low. Natalia does not have emotions for nothing but herself. We're done. We're done with her.
And they say, the producers say they got this call like 2 weeks before.
Yes.
It was going to air.
Yes. I mean, what do you make of this twist?
Well, it's confusing because people are saying that right now Natalia has a TikTok and the mans are commenting like nice things on it.
Yes.
So people are suggesting that like, so to me, it just felt very manipulative for a number of reasons. Number one, like, what's unacceptable to me is sort of anything. I feel like they still want you to be open to the possibility she was an adult the whole time.
Yes.
And that is closed. Like the fact something ain't right with her. Like, and that to me is so irresponsible. Like,
yeah.
they want to indicate that like maybe the Barnetts were onto something. They
yes,
want you to think like there's a read, but really what they're just trying to convey is like, really, we want you to stick around for the rest of the story. And to me, like, it just feels like Natalia, she probably made money from this. This is probably
hopefully
the only way she can make money. So it just feels like at this point, she's sort of like at the mercy of how much more she can kind of like pull from her story.
Yeah.
And it seems to me based on the, like, there's just some social media fodder that suggests she is on fine terms with the mans. They're helping her raise money. I don't know. To me, it just felt like the mans, the producers, and Natalia working together to orchestrate a season three.
Okay, I like the idea of Natalia being in on this because otherwise...
I don't know.
I would hope because...
I don't think it was her idea. I do, like, well, I guess there's so much to talk about. Like, the mans, like, again, I think they love Natalia to the extent they can also materially benefit from her.
Well, yes, because we have a section on their social media presence, but just going on this twist, it's like, okay, I just feel... This family, to me, are not reliable narrators. Like... You know, going off of how they blew up at Michael, who is a grown adult man, for using the word hell. Like, what do I think Natalia did? Did she miss church one time?
Like, exactly.
Did she say, God damn it? You know, like,
totally.
I was like, fuck this. You know, and know what? I guess I feel I'm happy to be wrong in this instance, but like, throughout her life, nobody has given this girl the benefit of the doubt. No. And like, I will give it to her now. Like, I'm just like, I don't trust this at all. And maybe you're right. Maybe I shouldn't watch a third part because there probably is going to be one now.
Yeah.
Because.
We'll watch it.
No, we're the problem. Because that's even the thing where it's like, even if she was violent, that part can easily be sort of understood or put into context with, again, the fact that she suffered severe childhood trauma. And I don't think if they had one childhood abuse expert and not just like that blonde prosecutor lady to just like talk about this stuff, I feel like everybody would be like, yes, I can understand this may be scary if you're living in a home with like a kid who's acting out or something. But like, but it also doesn't mean that they're in a horror movie. Like,
Right. It feels like they want, like, for us to just sort of forget everything about her past, all of the trauma. Like, again, when I was, like, doing deep dives on Reddits, a lot of, like, child psychologists, social workers were explaining that even if she did have a knife, like, the extent to which I feel like something the second season really strongly suggested more than even the first was that she was definitely sexually abused as a very young child.
It suggested that.
And the type of trauma that results from that and the degree to which kids act out like has gone even farther. So it almost seems like they're trying to set it up like a long term like TLC type family thing where it's now we're in the like chapter two where we're just but the specter of her maybe having manipulated everyone around her is always going to be part of like. Is always going to be in that, and that feels kind of irresponsible.
Yeah, it just seems ridiculous. Like, she, yes, like we've established she was a child, and
Yeah. And there are ways, like, she is entitled as a disabled adult to help from, like, the state. And it just seems like mm-hmm. nobody is, like, has ever bothered to help her get it. Like, even if if the Barnetts didn't want to live with her when she was an adult and they wanted her to, like, yeah, it would have probably taken them a couple months to figure out how to get her, like, all the adaptive stuff that she needed. And if she had a $600,000 advance, I don't know why that was such a problem. But again, yeah. the fact that she's, like, a volatile, potentially violent person.
Yeah.
Is just, that's, like, not really worth, okay, so are a lot of people. Like,
yeah, yeah. And I also, I feel like we forgot to mention, but Christine has not responded to any of the allegations, which I feel like, yeah, it was a little, I mean, Michael has a good sort of out right now mm-hmm. because he's been pinning it all on Christine. And to be fair, Natalia does seem to corroborate his story for the most part. Mm-hmm. Of course, he was definitely an enabler and complacent in this abuse. So he's definitely culpable, but it doesn't seem like he was the main perpetrator. But yeah, I don't know. At this point, I don't know if she's going to comment. Probably not.
Yeah.
I'm sure her attorneys are like, yeah. Don't say shit.
Right. And I was reading again on Reddit that, like, she has, like, stans, Christine.
Ew.
Like, she has like people that, like, fully think that she was in the right and that, like, she just had to protect her own children. What did you think about her discussion with, she was really confrontational with that former neighbor.
Natalia.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think she had every right to be. Like, again, these adults, you would think that they would be like, oh my God, I am so sorry. I didn't know. And look, like, the general public, I initially sort of believe the Barnetts, just even in the sense of, like, not immediately dismissing this and entertaining this whole quote unquote mystery. Like, mm-hmm. we all believe them to an extent. But then when you're proven to be false, I feel like, especially as the adult, you have to just fucking eat it and be like, I'm so sorry. Totally.
Exactly. Something interesting I was reading about, and I'm not part of this community, so I can't speak for them, but, like, it is not uncommon for people to assume that adults with dwarfism, that little people are children. And so I was reading some interesting commentary about, like, obviously we can reserve a lot of ire for her neighbors in that terrible neighborhood who didn't even, like, they probably should have called the police just to try to get somebody in there to see what was happening.
Yeah.
But, you know, if this person is repeatedly telling you that they're an adult, you know, like, at a certain point, maybe people were like, it's not fair for me to question this. There's just so much there that was working against her. And yes. Everybody in the story has such a convenient out, except for Natalia.
No, you're right. I mean, I do understand that, especially when, like, she has been manipulated and, like, coerced into telling people that she's an adult.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not going to fault them for believing what she's telling them, but I just feel like when you're confronted with the evidence,
exactly.
I would personally be breaking down. You know totally. What I mean? Like, I would have been
I would
more
be too
contrite.
Ashamed to even show my face.
Oh my gosh, for real. I'm like, why is this a catfish style confrontation? Like, we're doing this off camera.
Right, exactly.
I also just felt like this whole documentary didn't even need to be six parts. Like, it was just six parts of, like, Natalia recounting this abuse that she suffered. And I was like, look, I already believe this. Mm-hmm. I don't really need to hear it from the horse's mouth. Like, you know.
Yeah, that's how I felt too. And so it's like, it makes you think, how much do we need a season three? And there was actually an article recently about the bad vegan lady.
Oh, interesting.
And how, like,
oh, she's been pissed.
Right. The question is sort of like, what happens when you sell your story and you kind of exhausted it? And it's become the only way that you can make money. You have to add plot lines. And that sort of feels like maybe what she's doing. And she's just sort of like at the mercy of, you know, whatever pace these filmmakers want to tell their fun. What for them is just like a story they get to spin. So, like, yeah, I do wonder if we would have, like, how much of that twist at the end was really a result of, like, you know, a rift between the mans, and how much was, like, a coordinated effort between all of them to keep the story going.
Interesting. I mean, that's a sort of dystopian, but also kind of optimistic take in the same way. Like, I hope that Natalia's in on it, because my immediate sense was like, oh, these people are trying to fucking sell her out. So I hope she's not being exploited again.
Right. Like, the bad vegan lady, she basically, like, people wanted her to do another season with Netflix, and she's like, I'm never going back to Netflix.
Yeah, I don't blame her. Yeah, they made her look pretty bad.
They wanted her to, like, reopen it, and they're basically, like, holding, like, all these people were like paying her rent to like try to reopen the restaurant. And now basically she's like, I can't, she's just back to being in insane debt because she won't do it. But it is just so interesting. Like once, what happens after you sell your story and then it becomes your whole brand, your whole livelihood.
Oh no. Yeah. Interesting.
She's a non-disabled white straight woman who is in control of her destiny, and Natalia Grace was
not. No, totally. I know. Ugh, the bad vegan lady. That would be another episode. So as far as what's going on now, so I mean, we'll have to wait for the doc and maybe we won't watch it, but TBD. Right. But thankfully the good folks at Business Insider did a social media deep dive to try to clear things up. I did some digging of my own. Hashtag lucky journalism. Us. So this is assuming the man's called the producers around mid-December, just based on the screen or whatever. The reps at ID refused to confirm the timeline, which is interesting. So on December 26th, which would have been right around this voicemail comes through, the man's family TikTok account that exists paused to, you know, process. They posted that Natalia had launched her own account. And I'm not going to say the handle because I'm not giving them the publicity. Yeah. But they have close to 32,000 followers on TikTok and around 10K on Instagram. And they post videos of the kids getting like baptized. Mm-hmm. And they have videos of Natalia just like talking to the camera, like lip syncing and stuff. And I think their Instagram feed is pretty like Natalia heavy. So that post that they made about Natalia's TikTok had hashtags mama baby is growing up. Mm-hmm. Hashtag family is forever. Interesting. Hashtag go follow baby's page. So at this point, there doesn't seem to be bad blood. A December 29th post on Natalia's account has a picture of her and the man's family. And the caption reads, 2023 was amazing, but 2023 is going to be awesome. And the hashtags include family forever, and it tags the man's account. And then the man's family commented on that and they wrote, I love you so much, my forever baby. Natalia commented back, I love you, mama. So again, like,
and we think though, like based on what you said, those comments would have had to come after this phone call to the producers.
After or right around the time of this phone call. So I feel like that's a little interesting.
And they've also commented what, like, we can't say anything about what's happening next. And but Natalia has said, I'm okay, I'm safe.
Yes. So she posted on Instagram on Friday, to let people know that she's safe. She was like, I'm okay and doing well, and thank you all for your support and prayers. I wish I could tell you more about the show, but I signed an agreement with the show to keep things confidential for now. I will let you guys know when I can for sure, but just know I am okay. Love y'all. Hashtag safe. Hashtag living my best life. Mm. Interesting.
I just can't imagine like being one of these filmmakers and like going to Natalia and be like, okay, here's an ending, like continuing to like oppress her kind of and silence her. And now they're like participating in that. And
yeah. Why would
gross.
We not fucking end on a beautiful, happy ending?
Right.
Like I was like, this was a twist that nobody saw coming because like it should have been over.
Did you know that it was, because I knew it ended with a twist before I started watching it.
No, I didn't.
And for some reason, like I did feel like it was hard to keep watching all of those episodes. It's six episodes, but they were all like right around 40 minutes. So,
yeah.
So it's pretty quick. They really tried to stretch it. But I did feel like I had like, I kept wanting to spoil it for myself, but I did feel like I had like a responsibility to like not just to like hear her, to hear everything and not 100%. Just look for like the entertaining climax that I wanted to get to.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, it's not easy to sit through, but I feel like if you're interested in the story, you know, you should hear
her out. The fake
plants
out. Were driving me crazy.
The fake plants?
They were so ugly.
I didn't even notice that. That's so funny.
Serious.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't know that there was going to be a twist, and I almost actually turned it off, and I feel like that would have really changed my whole perception.
It was definitely like, I watched it in the rain last week with that like illness everybody in New York had, so got through it in like 3.5 hours.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I feel overall, you know, I understand the necessity of creating a narrative and an arc, but I think both seasons, and I will say the filmmakers, I think, did a really good job of including like a lot of people that they talked to, except for Natalia in the first season, which was like the noting.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, wow, you got this neighbor and this, that, and the other, and like didn't just, you know, recreate whatever Michael told you. But I do feel like there were just like things that it didn't need to be, where I was just like, if you actually followed the truth and didn't, I remember this one Netflix documentary. I forgot what it was about, but it was like three parts. But then the third part was literally just like random people talking about conspiracy theories. Mm. Like, it kind of felt like that, yeah. Where I was just like, if you didn't entertain all the like clearly false sideshow type that. Stuff,
yeah.
This would have been much shorter.
That's how I felt about the documentary about, I mean, I think, and this, I think their intention was to manipulate you in a way that made you think the one about
yes.
the woman who fell at the top of the Cecil Hotel one.
Oh, that's the one I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And yeah. it was like the whole time she fell in. Like,
yes.
That was always the case. But when they're doing it without any, yeah, I hate that when they just spin your wheels or you're listening to a podcast and they explore a lead the whole time. In the end, they give you a very obvious reason why.
Yeah.
Why that wasn't it. This kind of reminded me of like the like Kitty, like a modern day kind of like Kitty Genovese type thing where it's like apparently that is not as clean cut as nobody called.
Yes.
There's just a little more to it. That woman, like it was bad what happened and more people should have helped her. But if you actually look into it, there's just a lot to explore about bystander effect
yeah.
and like people just being busy and living their lives and not really wanting to interfere.
Yeah.
Because they think that, you know, yeah.
Especially in New York, I hear screaming totally. All the time.
Right.
I'm always like, is this a murder scream or just like someone screaming, you know?
Right. Totally.
So I get that. And there was a documentary on Netflix about that too. Mm,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess for now, I'm going to be monitoring this situation.
Yes. Not a curious case whatsoever. Just a disturbing one.
You're right. Just a disturbing one. And we've done it. We've cracked it. Thank you so much, Amanda, for coming on.
Of course. Thanks.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. If you had thoughts about the documentary, let us know in the good old Facebook group, Not Know the True Crime group. You could DM me on Instagram and Not Know the True Crime, or just slide right into my DMs. Sarah Lameem clearly have thoughts, so I want to hear it. And if you like the episode, please rate, review, subscribe, give us 5 stars. We super appreciate it. And other than that, as always, we thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Not Another True Crime podcast is produced by Jorge Morales-Pico, Sean Kilby, and Rebecca Sosmacat. Editing by Jorge Morales-Pico. Social media by Sarah Levine. Be sure to follow at Not Another True Crime on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And send all of your emails to natc@betches.com.
Betches.